Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome back to another great episode of Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with my own personal Ron and George Weasley of the Weasley Twins. How the hell are you guys doing, Randy?
I'm great. Which twin am I?
You're the funny one.
Which one is missing an ear?
The one that dies. I think it's Fred who dies, right?
Yeah, Fred dies. So I thought George is the one missing the ear.
Oh, really? I thought one of them got double whammy.
Oh, that sucks.
I could be wrong. Forgive me. Harry Potter fans, don't hate on me.
Oh, yeah. I thought one got one went one way and one goes another way.
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
We need a fact checker. ASAP.
Fact checker.
We derailed at an all-time new alarming pace. Yay.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. Give him crap. How are you doing, Justin?
I'm fabulous. No complaints.
No complaints?
No complaints at all. I am well in the world.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's a fun week. There's some good stories, some bad stories. Thought we'd start off with kind of a fun, lighthearted story. And I think it seems that thanks to Twitter, good things actually can happen on Twitter. It's not all hate and misery and people being pissed off at each other. Mm-hmm. Apparently, through interactions on Twitter, Mark Hamill and Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn realized that they were like neighbors. Like, they lived, like, right next to each other. And so they had made jokes that, just stop by for a cup of sugar, something like that. And barring a cup of sugar turned into, hey, why doesn't Mark Hamill, why not have Mark Hamill in Guardians of the Galaxy 3? You know, obviously it's in an unnamed, this is infant in its proceed. Nothing's official, but this could be a really fun thing that can spawn from the normal cesspool of Twitter. So I guess it raises a couple interesting questions, because obviously we know that Marvel and Star Wars are both under the same umbrella. And although Star Wars does take place in a galaxy far, far away, do you think that James Gunn is clever enough, Justin, to be able to maybe slip Luke Skywalker into Guardians of the Galaxy 3? Or do you think that would just, the internet would just revolt and Earth would end?
No, I think that'd be a good thing. I don't mind slipping a little Luke Skywalker anywhere. Slip inside me for all I care. Shit.
Randy, could you give us our third of Luke Skywalker that we didn't get on Guardians and Last Jedi? Could it be a big FU to people like Rian Johnson and Kathleen Kennedy? Like, hey, look, I know how to do Luke Skywalker.
Okay, well, let me be the first to say that I would personally vomit if there's any Star Wars Marvel crossovers. No, for real. That's fucked up, and those two shall not. That's like trying to crossbreed man with fucking horses. Sure, horse cock looks great. No, I'm talking about... No, I'm not going to talk about donkey shows again. Guys, again, guys, think about this. No, we don't want cross-pollination of two big franchises like that that don't belong in the same world together. The only way I could see a Luke Skywalker kind of appearance in the Guardians of the Galaxy is if they're specifically making reference to the current era of Star Wars movies now, and in some sort of dream or some sort of, hey, look, the TV screen is coming to life kind of thing, and Luke Skywalker is talking to me. That's the only kind of way that I could see, like, Mark Hamill playing Luke Skywalker in Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, that being said, there are all sorts of possibilities for Mark Hamill just to play some cool badass character. He doesn't have to play Luke. He doesn't have to be pigeonholed in that role forever, right? I mean, we could give him any kind of role, and he would do well in it. I have no doubt about that, but God damn it, I don't want to see Star Wars characters in Marvel movies. Just fucking bite your tongue.
You don't want to see him show up in, like, Golden Girls, the movie, or anything like that? It's your attitude, Randy.
Dude, this is worse than the 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover. What the fuck idea is that?
That would have been... I'm going to fight you on that one. 23 Jump Street Men in Black would have been amazing, because... It just, the ridiculousness of it would have been great, and the 21 and 22 Jump Street films were just perfect.
So. It was mercifully euthanized, I'll put it that way.
I saw a picture of Darth Vader done in a Tron sort of paint scheme, and it was
pretty cool. I have that on my phone, and I love that. but
that crossover is fine.
No. I wouldn't support that crossover because that's ridiculous.
You have it on your phone. What do you mean I'm supporting it?
I like the art. I'm supporting the artist. You look at it every day.
It's important to support local art, Dave.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean I want to see it.
I agree, Randy. Name me the artist that made that.
Fuck if I know.
No, well, there you go. It's quite the support you got there.
The MCP.
It's the internet. It's art on the internet. And as far as art on the internet goes, it could belong to anybody because nobody knows who the artist is. That's why so many people's shit gets ripped off.
Yeah.
And I too don't want to necessarily see a crossover just because I don't want to see it exploited. Obviously, Mark Hamill probably will not play Luke Skywalker. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I could see him being a fun little CGI character like Kron, like Taika Waititi's character in Thor 3 was. I could see him doing something like a fun little like thing where he shows up for like a scene or two and, you know, probably works for 3 or 4 days. But I think it'd be funny if just in the background if there's like some big fight scene, just in the background is fucking Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, they could even do it to where Quill is watching Star Wars because he was alive after it was made.
Yeah.
You know, he could have gotten his hands on a VHS tape of Star Wars or something.
Or it could be something like, you know, Ego takes the form of David Hasselhoff because that's one of Quill's heroes, you know. Something similar like that could happen. All of a sudden, there's Luke Skywalker. Be like, holy shit. The Grandmaster of them all. And because I know everyone was worried, George Weasley lost the ear. Fred Weasley is the one who was killed.
All right.
It was not a double. It was not a double whammy.
Yeah.
Thank you for fact-checking.
You're welcome. I've pissed off the person who was writing the angry letter because they're like, no, I can't complain because they corrected themselves. Now he's going to send a different letter about, you know, something else.
Yeah.
But who knows? But switching gears from the greatest Jedi of all time to the worst human possibly of all time, the Weinstein Company is filed for bankruptcy. The Weinstein Company obviously owns a lot of different endeavors. You know, it's not just their film production and distribution network. They also, you know, produce books, and they had many, many facets of their business. And although Harvey Weinstein was a terrible person, you know, he employed, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people who it now looks will unfortunately lose their jobs. They were trying to find a way to split the businesses and have different companies purchase different parts of the business and bring it under their own umbrella so they would no longer have the stigma of being called the Weinstein Company. So it's unfortunate. So Randy, I mean, this is a very unique case in that, you know, someone's name is so poisonous that their legacy is just tainted to where you can't have these companies anymore. Is this just a missed opportunity? Because they did have some decent assets. You know, the Weinstein Company does have a pretty robust library of award-winning films. You know, they were kind of the go-to studio. Do you think that now that they're filing for bankruptcy, someone's just going to kind of swoop up and buy them as a whole at a discounted price and, you know, take the good pieces and throw out the bad pieces?
That would make sense. You know, they were always kind of like a smaller outlier from the bigger studios anyway, so it could just as easily be taken into the fold virtually anywhere. You know, snap up the good stuff and then let the chuff just kind of fall away.
Now, so Justin, it brings up an interesting point of, you know, we know that Harvey Weinstein, you know, he can never be properly punished, but, you know, he's no longer part of the company. He would no longer profit from any business the company has. You know, obviously the company as a whole has done a good job of distancing itself from him by, you know, renouncing him and stuff like that. Do you think there would have been room for the Weinstein Company to exist as it currently is and currently named? Do you think people would be like, I understand it's called the Weinstein Company, but Harvey Weinstein is no longer associated with it. And could it still function, or is it just you got to throw the baby out with the bathwater?
It makes more sense to just rebrand and get rid of the name altogether.
Yeah, start fresh start.
Yeah, Dunder Mifflin makes... Infinity.
Not the Michael Scott Paper Company.
Yeah. Big Red Paper all... Company. All these dumb names.
Let's go all brand new. Yep. All right, well, switching from the negative there, Aquaman has had some early test screenings. So they showed a very early cut of Aquaman. Aquaman, of course, comes out on Christmas of this year, so we're still, 10 months away. But there's a cut with the effects not completed and stuff like that, but it's receiving very positive reactions from those who have seen it. It's important to note that, Wonder Woman was kind of universally disliked at its early test screenings, and it turned out pretty good. Something like Justice League, when it finally got its Joss Whedon early cut, it was kind of universally praised as well. So there's kind of a spotty track record when it comes to these. It's early enough to where anything highly negative can still kind of be tweaked and massaged, and anything that's really highlighted that people loved, they can kind of give you a little bit more of it because we're so far out. So does this make you more optimistic, Justin, about Aquaman? Where is your excitement level for Aquaman? And hearing that people are excited for what they've seen so far, does that make you more excited?
Yeah, I've always been pleasantly intrigued about the idea of an Aquaman movie. I like Aquaman. I don't want to say I've always been a fan, but in my adult years, I've always enjoyed Aquaman comics. And I don't know, I'm excited at the idea of an Aquaman movie. It's going to be tricky. We do know that there's that whole weird thing with Justice League, how they get out of the water to talk. There's sort of that air bubble that they're in. So, I don't know, it's kind of strange. It is going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds. But I like Jason Momoa. I think he's a fun Aquaman. So it has good things going for it. I do have a lot of questions, but I can wait patiently for them to be answered.
My man. So Randy, I guess kind of the same question. Are you excited for Aquaman? And then is we're being told that it's a very action-heavy movie, but with kind of, moments of character development, which kind of...
Moments.
Yeah, which kind of feels like maybe like they're trying to hint on maybe like a Wonder Woman vibe, making us kind of care about Arthur Curry, because the Arthur Curry we got in Justice League just seems like a brash kind of guy. I don't really see much, an incredible amount of depth to him. Are you optimistic now that James Wan, who's got a pretty good track record as far as filmmaking goes, that he'll be able to make us care about Aquaman? So I guess, are you excited for Aquaman? Does your positive reaction make you more excited for Aquaman? And do you think that Arthur Curry that we've seen in Justice League is someone who can have depth?
Take this with a grain of salt from a guy who has yet to see Justice League.
You saw Batman v Superman.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know nothing about no Aquaman.
you saw the trailers.
I saw the trailers. Yeah. Goes. Yeah. But I have talked to somebody who was purported to be at one of these test screenings, and he had very glowing reviews of the movie. And he said personally that he was surprised at the character depth that they were building with it.
Aquaman test screening?
The Aquaman test screening. So that being said, it seems that you guys are hitting it right on the head, that it does sound like they are trying to kind of humanize him a little bit, maybe go the route of Wonder Woman, making people really relate to him. So I personally still don't really give two shits about seeing it, but I'm glad to hear that others are excited about it.
Will you see it when it comes out?
Probably not. I mean, like, maybe a few months later, I'll catch it when it's convenient.
Yeah, you're on a very popular podcast called Geek Legacy Podcast, where we talk about geeky shit. You should probably see some comic book movies, Randy.
I know. I should
get your movie pass. You can come with me. We'll go like all the time.
I do. I really need to get a movie pass.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
changed my life. I saw a movie called Padman. It was a movie that was in Hindi, produced in India, about a guy who tried to make less expensive sanitary napkins for women, and it was a delight.
That sounds fantastic. When I think of Padman, I'm thinking of like some really bad bootleg, like D-list superhero who's just wearing hockey pads,
He's not wearing hockey pads.
Well, I guess sticking with DC, the non-Mouse House comic books, Joss Whedon, who was, you know, locked in to write and direct the Batgirl movie, and who just weeks ago DC had declared that Batgirl was going to be one of their very next movies going into production after Aquaman, has left the project and left in spectacularly honest fashion. He's basically said, after all this time, I realized I just didn't have a very good story to tell. to which a lot of new, now female writers have come out and said that, oh, well, I'll take over. And, you know, the president of Warner Brothers actually gave out her email address on Twitter. And so I'm assuming she's getting inundated with thousands and thousands of pitches of what a background movie could be. So, so Randy, you know, a couple months ago, you know, all this stuff came out from Joss Whedon's wife, kind of saying how maybe he's not quite the feminist icon that he positions himself to be, and we talked about that on the podcast. Do you think that with, you know, the Me Too and the Time's Up movement, is this just Joss Whedon's way of kind of getting out of the way so that they can bring on a female director so he doesn't have to get a bunch of shit for being a straight white man?
It could be, or this could just be a graceful way of covering up the fact that he was let go from the project for that very reason. You know? Because nobody wants that kind of stigma around a project or, you know, any kind of bad juju. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he was just let go from the project and is being allowed to kind of bow out gracefully, making it sound like it's his own idea.
Instead of getting Zack Snyder'd?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're talking the same company that you know, did both, so who knows?
Right. Who doesn't seem to have a fucking clue.
Yeah.
So what do you say, Justin? I don't even know where to start with this thing. You know, Whedon came in, he cleaned up Justice League for him. You know, he made their 2-hour mandate. It seems like he did everything they wanted him to do. Do you think, you know, like Randy was saying that maybe he's covering it up? Do you think that Warner Brothers is displeased at the performance of Justice League? That maybe they were expecting Whedon to do more? And he did what he could and gave them the 2-hour movie that they wanted on time before Christmas so they can get their bonuses. And now they're just like, well, it didn't do very good. I don't think we want you. Batgirl's stupid.
excuse me. No, I don't think that's the case. I think that he just doesn't have anything. And I think he probably even wants a woman to direct the movie. I think that would make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just
kind of lost wood.
Yeah, it's one of those things where a lot of people were excited about the idea. He's no stranger to writing powerful women. You know, Buffy's a perfect example of that. But I just think that fast forward, I mean, that was, you know, that was late 90s, early 2000s. Fast forward to now 2018, and I think it makes perfect sense for a woman to write this movie and for a woman to direct the movie, especially if it's on a female-centric character. That's not to say that it wouldn't be good, but maybe he just feels that he doesn't have what it takes to make this movie be the best it could be. And I think that that's fine. The only reason why I don't think he's just bowing out gracefully as far as, you know, like sucking and everything like that, because I feel like he did do what he could, and Justice League wasn't a bad movie. It didn't make $1 billion, which is weird considering all the superpowers that are in it. But everyone's just ragging on DC right now. Now's a good time to not like DC, and it has been for a while. And that's just why surround yourself around that sort of negativity. No matter how hard he works, I don't think the payoff would be worth it.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, do you think that I know they're kind of interchangeable, but do you think that the negativity is around DC, or do you think that it's around Zack Snyder? Because they got a pretty decent reprieve when Wonder Woman came out, which was the first kind of non-Zack Snyder influence. You know, Suicide Squad was David Ayer, but it was kind of heavily influenced by Zack Snyder, to where Wonder Woman came out, everyone kind of forgot. They're like, oh, maybe they're riding the ship here. And, you know, people are talking like, oh, maybe we'll nominate for an Academy Award, you know, this and that made all this money. And then we go right back into Snyder with Justice League, and then it's all doom and gloom again. And now that we're out of the Zack Snyder era, we go to Aquaman, and now Aquaman seems to kind of be that people having positive reactions of it. You know, we hear all of this drama on all of these DC films, you know, be it the Batman with all of its turmoil, now Batgirl, the Flash with all its director. You know, we really didn't hear anything about Aquaman. So by all accounts, Aquaman was kind of a smooth sailing, no pun intended. So do you think we have a problem with DC, or do you think we have a problem with Zack Snyder's DC?
I mean, that's a really good question. It could be a bit of both, probably mostly Snyder, but it's hard to really say about any upcoming project, because Flash was that's been a problem since it started.
Yeah.
You know, and then I don't know. It's hard to say. I know that a lot of people are hating on Zack Snyder and the world that he created, but I mean, I liked Man of Steel. I thought that movie was terrific, but not everyone shares the same sentiment. So, and I also like The Watchmen. So I'm not like and 300. So I'm not like a total anti-Snyder guy. It's just some of the motion picture shows and what they're trying to do and maybe catch up with Marvel just wasn't working. And I don't know. It's hard to say. It could be the entire formula. It could be Zack Snyder. I don't have an answer for you, David. But
what do you think? What do you think the DC could do to foster more goodwill amongst, you know, like fans and general audiences?
Well, I think the Flashpoint idea is a really good way to start. You know, the crowd at Comic-Con went absolutely insane when the Flashpoint logo appeared above the Flash title card. Everyone just fucking went insane. So that is one of the best stories out of all these characters, and it gives them a chance to right the wrongs. And I think that's literally the best answer that they can give you, is change things up a bit, mix it around. Obviously Snyder's out, so they can get the new blood, get the new directors, and go from there. It's just a lot of money, man. Warner Bros. Is sinking a lot of money into these franchises, so they got to see their returns. It's just weird when you see all these other movies making $1 billion, and they are not.
Yeah, and I think you made a lot of good points there. And, you know, as a vocal dissident in the Zack Snyder DC world, I think that what they can do, what they should do is, I think they need to stop trying to be Marvel and connecting everything and bringing everything together. I think that Wonder Woman, for the most part, stood on its own. It wasn't trying to connect a million different ways with a million different things. You know, it had its tie-in with Batman v Superman with the photo and stuff like that. But for the most part, it was its own thing. You know, Man of Steel, which is probably what a lot of people like Man of Steel. And, you know, it wasn't trying to set up this universe with all of these other characters and stuff like that. It was a Superman movie. Perfect. Wonder Woman's a Wonder Woman movie. Great. From all accounts so far, from what we know about Aquaman, it looks like it's going to be, you know, basically an Aquaman movie. And I think they need to stop worrying about, like, the Avengers effect of trying to make this all fit together. I think they need to just make these movies, make them the best they can about the character that they're focusing on. And if they get momentum and they're able to connect them in the future, great. But it seems like at this point they're just trying to force too much. And I think that they just need to step back and they just need to go out and make the best Aquaman movie, go out and make the best Batman movie, go out and make another great Wonder Woman movie, and not worry about how they all fit together in the larger world.
There you go.
Boom. Right, Randy?
Yes. Sorry, I had my mic muted.
Sure you did. Well, that was kind of heavy, so let's go to something light. Everyone loves Iron Man 2, right, Justin?
Oh, your favorite. Yeah. That's hands down my favorite.
You actually don't even have an alarm clock. Your phone just starts playing Iron Man 2 to wake you up. The, like, Monte Carlo scene with Whiplash.
Oh, my God. That movie is not good.
No, that movie is not good. Whiplash is not good. The whole, like, palladium poisoning or whatever Tony Stark has, not good. But for me, I love Sam Rockwell, and I love him as the Justin Hammer, like the anti-Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Just that schmarmy kind of guy. And apparently Sam Rockwell actually is interested in coming back to Marvel. So as Justin Hammer, you know, possibly, and, you know, we don't know what happens to Tony Stark / Iron Man in these next Avenger movies, but he's interested in coming back. Maybe he's going to fill a hole left by a deceased Tony Stark. You never know. But Justin, what do you think about Sam Rockwell and his possible re-entry into the Marvel Universe?
Love every second of it. He is amazing. I love Sam Rockwell. Everything he does just cracks me up. So I say yes, thumbs up. I'll take
it. Nice. What about you, Rando?
Couldn't agree more. Justin said it perfectly. I love that guy.
Did you guys see the 10-year reunion photo for Marvel?
Yeah.
It's just incredible when, like, you actually look at it and you're like, oh my god, look at all these people that have been in, and these, like, just heavy hitters. And it was very telling based on, like, where you were in the picture, like, you know, like, dead center versus, like, once you started to, like, tilly up. But, I mean, you got, like, Michael Douglas, you got Kurt Russell, you got all these just huge names, and it was a... Marvel has built themselves a pretty impressive thing, and it's exciting to see that even after 10 years, and, you know, there is some fatigue with comic movies, you know, they still know, they still have their finger on the pulse of the audience. You know, they gave us Black Panther, they gave us Thor, they're going to give us Avengers, and we all just seem happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And just real quick, we got word that they're, even before Jurassic World 2 comes out, Jurassic World 3 has already been greenlit and put into pre-production. No word on anything as far as, you know, director, writer, anything like that. You know, obviously Colin Trevorrow couldn't do the second one because he was going to do Episode 9, but now Episode 9 is going back to Abrams. So, Randy, you think they're going to bring back Trevorrow for Jurassic World 3, or do you think he'll just stick on as like a producer and writer?
I mean, I, just playing it safe, I'll say just as a producer and writer, but they're kind of putting the cart in front of the horse by announcing that before Jurassic World 2 comes out, because we have no idea what to expect with this movie and what the audience reaction is going to be.
Long as there's plenty of Goldblum.
Right?
That's all that matters. That's all we need.
Yeah.
I hope he's not just in that courtroom scene.
I bet he is.
Probably.
But even so, it's still 100% more Goldblum than the first Jurassic World had.
That's true.
So, Justin, you think that we're just going to get Goldblum in the courtroom scene and that's it?
Yeah. I do. I mean, I think that the less is more approach works well with that. It would be silly to put him back on... I don't know what circumstances would ever make him want to go back to an island filled with dinosaurs. I think that he has the right attitude of fuck this. So if I were Ian Malcolm's character, I would not go near another dino for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And no one would blame him. Yeah, I don't think we're getting him on the island either. I'm hoping we'll get a couple scenes where he's off the island interacting with some of our main characters, but yeah, he's not getting tricked back on that island.
It'd be absurd to go back.
Yeah, and then finally, Randy, you had a pair of Star Wars centric things you wanted to chat about.
Yeah, so the Last Jedi novel comes out next week, March 6th, I believe, and copies have already started hitting people's hands. And word around the internet is there are some revelations, some actual scenes and things that we get in the novel that weren't there in the movie. One of which is something we've talked about here before, but apparently there is a funeral for Han Solo, which is nice and, in my opinion, feels needed. But there's some other particularly interesting things that are worth mentioning as well. One of them is it actually mentions Leia's final words at the end of The Last Jedi, as a spoiler alert, as Luke fades away and dies, and it kind of it'll later cut to the remaining Resistance / Rebels in the Falcon. Chewie's up front piloting, and Leia's in the back cavorting with R2 and the rest of them. In the novel, she has a moment where she kind of hugs Chewie, like the moment that she kind of feels Luke die. Or shortly thereafter, and basically looks up at him and says, it's just the two of us now. Which, when you think about it, is kind of a dick thing to say, because 3PO and R2 are still around, so she clearly doesn't consider them sentient. But basically, that is kind of in... Everybody is speculating that little Leia Chewie moment is kind of there to make up for the fact that she totally snubbed Chewie at the end of Force Awakens, and hugged Rey instead when they returned after Han's death, instead of hugging the actual walking carpet that she's known the majority of her life, you know? So that's one of the revelations from the novel. Another one is that...
well, real quick, is that the exchange take place after she says the thing with Rey where she's like, where Rey's talking about the Jedi and she's like, we have everything we need here?
I think it takes place before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It doesn't say in context where exactly it takes place, but pretty much it made it sound like it was almost right after we see Luke die.
Gotcha.
Also, speaking of Luke dying, there's something that I don't think we actually heard in the movie, but before he gives up the ghost, so to speak, you hear Obi-Wan, the voice of old Obi-Wan, telling him to let go. So, while there is vintage recordings of Alec Guinness basically saying, let go, they could have used it, but I think they chose not to in the movie, but it is in the novel. So you hear basically Obi-Wan giving Luke permission to go ahead and be one with the Force, which I thought was interesting. But the biggest thing of all is after the whole Leia Poppins scene and she's out flying through space, when she is back in the Resistance ship, she's in a coma for a while. What we never find out in the movie but comes out in the novel is even after she wakes up, she's diagnosed as suffering from solar radiation and hypoxia. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good, and it sounds like a condition that stays with her and afflicts her all the way through the end of the movie. Like, when you see her on Crate at the end and she's wearing that big dress and it's covering up half her face and everything, in the novel, it sounds like the context of that is she's kind of covering up how ill she really is. She's kind of covering her face to cover up how ill she looks and everything. And a lot of people are speculating that that it's going to be these illnesses that she succumbs to and dies from, either very early on in episode 9, like it'll start out and she's already in a coma or something like that, or they're going to kill her off screen and explain it in the opening crawl, which we've already kind of talked about before. We said that that would be a shitty way to kill off her character. They could have come up with a bunch of other different ways, but it really sounds like that might be the direction that they're going, and that the novel has a chance to kind of drop some Easter eggs that the movie did not have the opportunity to kind of make public. So there's that. Those are really kind of the biggest things that that have come out of the novel that I've heard of. The other Star Wars news that I really want to share with you guys, this is something I'm really excited and passionate about. Ever since I was a kid seeing Return of the Jedi, I always wanted a toy version of Jabba the Hutt's sail barge. And not like some little matchbox like toy version of it that you can fit in the palm of your hand. I'm talking like some big 4-foot monstrosity that you can fit the 3 3/4 inch figures into. And we never thought that Hasbro would actually do it because it's such a big fucking toy. And here we are 37 years after, 38 years after the movie's been released. Again, here we are, and Hasbro has revealed at Toy Fair last week that there is a prototype, 4-foot-long, 2-feet-tall, Jabba the Hutt sail barge, and what they're doing is they're doing this thing through, it's kind of their own crowdfunding platform called Hasbro Lab, and if you go to www.hasbrolab.com, you can read all about it, check it out, there's a neat little video that shows you what this super cool giant-ass sail barge toy is going to be. But what they're doing is they're for $500, they're, you can buy into it, just like a Kickstarter or Indiegogo kind of campaign. But they're pre-selling these toys, and they have to hit a quota of at least 5,000 pre-orders by, I want to say it's the beginning of April. It's there's like 35 days left on this campaign as of the day that we're recording this. But they have to get 5,000 pre-orders, otherwise it's not going to happen. And we're probably never going to have the opportunity to get such a big, huge, cool display piece playset like this ever again. So as of this recording, there's something like, there's over 2,000. It's probably close to 2,100 right about now. And it's only been going on for something like 11 days. So there's a really good chance that we're going to hit this 5,000 number. I just want to help get the word out there. I'm not getting anything from this other than the joy of sharing this knowledge out there with other potential Star Wars collector fans that have wanted a big, giant display piece like this in their collection. When I was a kid, I made about a 4-foot-long sail barge out of paper mache, and it sat in my room from the late 80s till the early 90s until I realized that if I ever tried to bring a girl over, there's no way she's going to be into this thing that I built. So I ended up getting rid of it. But man, I've always wanted this, and I highly recommend you check out the pictures online and watch the video. The guy that designed it is Mark Boudreau. He works, he's the lead designer over at Hasbro for the Star Wars stuff. He's been with the company since it was Kenner, since the late 70s. He designed the original Millennium Falcon toy that everybody loved as a child, and you know, that you may remember having grown up with yourself, or maybe your parents had it growing up. It's super cool. The guy has a deep love for Star Wars and is really into making these really badass toys. And it's neat that here we are practically 40 years later, and he's still working for the company, making some of the coolest Star Wars toys you could possibly imagine. And I cannot stress enough how detailed this playset is. It is just by far the biggest, most detailed thing that they have ever proposed for Star Wars. And it's only going to come to fruition if we as fans and as collectors go out there and pre-order this thing, because if they don't get 5,000, it's not going to get made, and then they're never going to have the opportunity to maybe put out a giant Death Star playset or a Star Destroyer playset or any other huge big playsets that we would like to see in the future. They're just going to, you know, kick the idea aside because, well, we tried it with the sail barge and there weren't enough people, so why would we bother trying again? It's up to us to make sure that big, cool, huge toys, like giant-ass playsets like Castle Grayskull we grew up with, they don't make shit big like that anymore.
Or the flag, USS flag from G.I. Joe.
Absolutely. That's
ridiculous aircraft carrier.
That's a perfect thing to compare it to. This is the Star Wars version of the USS flag. This is something that, you know, they just don't make anymore, and we have the opportunity to help get it made. And $500 for a big-ass toy like that, it's really not that bad when you consider it. I mean, how much did you all spend for one of those giant 7,000-piece Millennium Falcon Lego sets? Come on, this is so cool. 3¾-inch scaled, super detailed. Come on, guys. This is super awesome. At least go look at it. Maybe tell some of your friends about it if you can't afford it. I know $500 is a lot of money, but goddamn, this is going to be super cool and kind of a milestone for any Star Wars collector. Yeah, and that's all I got to say about that.
That's crazy. Yeah, it looks like there are 2,103 backers, 34 days to go, ends on April 3rd. It's 49 inches wide by 17 inches tall. Comes with Jabba. I wish it came with more figures. Because I hate the fact that it'd be cool if it came with, a Klaatu, a Nikto, and a Burrata.
That would be cool, but I will say that simultaneously, because even though the pre-orders for this ends April 3rd of this year, they're not going to be shipping these until February of 2019, so it's going to be almost a full year until you actually receive it. And at that time, concurrently, they have it planned out that with the vintage collection of figures that Hasbro is putting out, right at that same time, there's going to be a wave of figures that includes a bunch of Jabba's guys. It's going to be like Yak Face and Klaatu in his Skiff Guard outfit. And maybe they'll re-release some of the other older ones that they've put out. But there are tons of figures that are already out there that you could probably pick up for cheap on eBay right now to fill this thing up when you get it. And, oh, man, you're going to need a bunch of figures to fill it up because that thing is fucking huge.
Yeah, that's what kind of what I was concerned about, is I figured they were going to try to make figures to sell for the barge. But, I mean, like, unless you are one of the 5,000 who owns this barge, I mean, who's picking up a Klaatu?
Well, I mean, look at all the other random skiff guards that have come out over the years, and what else are you going to do with them? You can only fit, like, 5 or 6 of them on the little skiff, you know, that they pitch people into the Sarlacc pit from. So it's like they've made probably 20 different skiff guard figures over the vent or over the modern era of Star Wars toys. It's like, what else are you going to do with them other than display them on a shelf or, you know, stick them in the sandbox? So now you'll actually finally have a place to stick all those old figures. And if you don't already have them, you can get them cheaper on eBay now than you probably could buy them for in the stores when they were brand new. So stock up on that shit now before the toy comes out. That way you'll get kind of a head start on everybody else.
Man.
Yeah.
We could do whole podcast on old playsets. I'm looking at some of these. I had some really incredible ones, dude. Like Snake Mountain, Castle Grayskull, the Boulder Hill playset, the Ewok Village. Some really cool shit, man.
Absolutely. We should do a video podcast because I have a lot of that shit, and I would totally set it up, and we could just sit on the floor like a bunch of goddamn kids playing with this stuff while we talk about it. I would be in hog heaven.
Do it. We'll do it on the Twitch channel when we play D&D over on Twitch.
There you go.
What do you call it? The Ghostbusters Firehouse headquarters? I never even saw that before.
That thing is huge, too, because those figures were pretty tall. They were tall figures.
They were the weird size, yeah. No one likes those ones.
People are weird.
People are weird down there.
Well, awesome. So what was that website you're going to go to again, Randy, to order it?
www.hasbrolab.com. That's HASBROLAB.com.
Well, awesome. Well, seems like a pretty good deal. Yeah. 500 bones.
Yeah, I know it's fucking expensive, but it's got to be so worth it. And look at it like this. Consider it an investment. If they only make 5,000 of these and they are that ridiculously high price point, and they're probably not going to end up ever going to any major retailer. Just think, if there's only 5,000 of them out there, you could probably take that thing that you're buying for $500 and flip it in 6 months' time, sell it for $800 or $1,000. So you could theoretically turn around and sell it. The negative thing right now is they're not shipping outside of the U.S., so if there are any international listeners that might be interested in getting this, right now they're only shipping to addresses within the United States. They're working on that. I think before the end of the campaign, they're going to have some sort of international shipping option. But consider this. If you live in the States and you want to make a few bucks, buy it for $500, sell it to some of our friends over in the UK for $700, you know?
Oh, man, you went the other way. I was going to say if you live outside the U.S., ship it to Randy's house and then he'll ship it to you.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're the enterprising individual who wants to make some money off of this and still support the cause, buy it. Sell it a little high, but at least give them a shipping option to send it elsewhere.
There you go.
You know, capitalism.
Yes.
Yes, capitalism. Well, awesome. Well, anything else, Randy, you got for us?
That's all I got this time.
I can't imagine.
What are you, Justin? You got anything for us?
No. Not interested in anything else.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us for another amazing episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure to go to geeklegacy.com for your geek news and reviews. And whilst there, listen to the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Steven James talking about video games. And, make sure you like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those places at Geek Legacy. And until next time, we'll talk to you another time.